Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Dolphin fans, and thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com daily, the most listened to Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Steven Masso, on this Thursday, December 13th. In this episode, we're going to be going over the miracle in Miami, the Miami miracle, the miracle at Hard Rock, whatever you want to call it. Of course, we have to touch on that a little bit and discuss it. I'm going to be giving my main takeaways from that game between the Patriots and the Dolphins. I'm going to be talking a little bit about Frank Gore because he deserves a shout out. He deserves a few minutes of his own just to talk about what he has been able to do this season. We all know about his age, but it is enough to dedicate and give him a huge shout out for what he is doing. And then I also want to talk about the culture change. Is it real? It's something that we heard talked about so much in the offseason. The culture change, the team that Gase wants in this locker room. Is it real? I was able to go into that locker room post game, so I have a little bit of insight as to whether I think that culture change was accomplished or whether it was not. And then, of course, we have to look forward to the Vikings game a little bit and touch on some key points and what will need to be addressed for that game. So first things first, the Miracle Miami. Wow, what an absolute crazy and unprecedented type of finish. No one saw this coming. It was absolutely ridiculous, and I really hope fans are able to appreciate what kind of historic, monumental moment this was. This is something that will be engraved in history forever. It will be instilled in the memories of fans for the rest of time. It will be passed down from generations to generations. What we saw at the end of this game is the reason we all love sports, not even just football, but all of sports. It was the unexpected underdog going up against what many would call the bully of the league, per se. And then with all odds stacked against him, the final minute, a last second game-winning touchdown. That is the reason that people love sports so much. Those are the moments where it's more than just sports, where it transcends into something beautiful. It brings people together, and it's just some type of magical moment. So I hope we were all able to enjoy that for a little bit. I do want to touch on some keynotes, though, from this game just a little bit, and I don't want to be that guy, but there are some positives and some negatives, and it almost feels blasphemous, it really does, to bring up negatives in this game, but someone needs to do it, so I'll go ahead and touch on the keynotes, the positives, and the negatives. Of course, the biggest positive in this game, it was ridiculous. It was the run game. The run game in this game, predominantly Frank Gore, looked unstoppable. He was unmatched. He, right now, this season, he is averaging 4.7 yards per carry. The last time he finished a season with 4.7 yards per carry was 2012, and that was when Rams running back Steven Jackson had over 1,000 yards and Arian Foster led the league in carries. So that was such a long time ago. Steven Jackson, the guy with the dreads, way back. That's when I was just a kid. It's crazy to think that Frank Gore is still managing to put up these kind of numbers and remain this productive at this point in his career, so I have to give him a big shout out. He was the workhorse back in this game. And then, of course, Brandon Bolden, the former Patriot, came out with his revenge game. He only had 2 carries, but both of them were touchdowns. Both of them were huge plays in this game, and frankly, both of them made you think, you know, why didn't the Patriots give this guy the ball more? Because he did look very explosive once he hit those holes. A big shout out to the blocking as well. And then, of course, Kenyon Drake was also a vital part. He played the hero role in this game as he scored, of course, that miracle touchdown to close the game. So the running back group was absolutely terrific. It was amazing, and it really showed what the offense is capable when they are able to keep the running game for the duration of the game and not be forced to abandon it at one point, because it really showed Tannehill was able to take what was given to him, and that's more of his style. He is not a guy that will succeed as that Matthew Stafford type gunslinger, that Mahomes. We know his limitations. He is best when he is taking what the defense is giving to him and working those underneath routes. That's what he did in this game. So that will move on to my next point, and that was Ryan Tannehill. And this one, he does get a positive. This was one of his better games, but I'm still just not quite on board with him being the guy. People are looking at the completion percentage. They're looking at the three touchdowns. They're looking at the quarterback rating, and they're using that as a boost for him that he is, you know, reached this elite level of play. But I don't think he's quite there yet. Of course, you take away that huge touchdown, and people don't like the fact that you can take it away, but it was a miracle touchdown, so you can't rely on those consistently. You take that away, again, it's a less than 200-yard performance, two touchdowns, and potentially a loss, which would have looked, of course, a lot worse on him than the three touchdowns and the huge play at the end and the win. So I watched this game, and I was very, very proud of the offensive line. I was very proud of the group of running backs. They looked all terrific, and I was pretty happy with the play calling. Tannehill, like I said, it gets a positive. He had this one very nice dime of a throw to Kenny Stills. He had a few other ones where he was under pressure, and it looked amazing. And then, of course, he had that touchdown to Bryce Butler, which was almost identical to the same pass he threw to Devontae Parker in the week before. So those were all good. One play that I don't see being thrown around too much is that he threw what was a very easy pick six for Stephon Gilmore. It was in the first half of the game. Stephon Gilmore played terrific all game. He threw one to Devontae Parker. Gilmore easily undercut the route, and he had it in stride, and he dropped it. It would have been a pick six. There was nobody there to stop him, and that likely would have changed the entire outcome of the game. So of course, I'm not going to use that as a knock, but when people throw around the quarterback rating and they're looking purely at the stats, I do see some things that could be improved upon, and I wasn't just completely mesmerized. I don't think he reached some elite game out of nowhere just because his stat line shows the three touchdowns. And I think when people evaluate Tannehill, they need to keep in mind this is a starting quarterback, and you should be comparing him to other starting quarterbacks. Like, that throw to Bryce Butler was nice, but it's a throw that should be made by a starting quarterback. Every quarterback should be able to make that throw. So it's not like he reached some elite talent. He is just doing what should have been done from him. So that is how I see it. I will say it was a good game from him. I give him the props when it's due, but I don't see how you can base off this game. I know his completion percentage is high and his quarterback rating's high, but he is not elite. He should not be with the Drew Brees. He should not be with the Russell Wilsons or the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's. He should not be in that conversation yet. He is doing pretty good, and I give him the props, but just tone it down a little bit. He is not elite. Good stat line, kind of inflated a bit, but you know, he is doing what needs to be done and keeping the mistakes to a minimum. I think that is enough from him. Okay, now we move on to what is one of my main takeaways from this game between the Patriots and the Dolphins, and it is that the Dolphins can beat almost any team in the league, but with that being said, they can also lose to almost any team in the league. You don't really know which team you're gonna get, and I think the reason they can beat almost any team is because they are passionate. They are playing for Adam Gase terrifically. They are playing for him extremely, extremely well. And this Dolphins team right now, I think they're starting to turn more into a team that opponents see, and they're kind of like, okay, we don't really want to go up against that team anymore, because you don't know what you're going to get. You could get potentially a very, very tough matchup. You could get, you know, an easy walk in the park if the defense is giving up 200 yards rushing, or if Tannehill's turning the ball over a lot, but there's also the potential that they're going to come out and they're going to try to hit you in the mouth, and that's the type of team that we saw against the Patriots right now, and I think that's the Dolphins' main problem right now, is being consistent. And consistency is basically how you measure a team. The Patriots are known for being consistent, and that is what the Dolphins should strive for. I think one of their main issues is that they have a lot of young guys, and there's going to be growing pains. There's a lot to learn from in this league. So having the young guys, that's something that you're kind of taking on. You know it's going to be a growing process. So I think as these guys come to age, we will start to see more and more of the team's max potential. I think we are still a bit away from it, but it is definitely on the horizon. So that kind of brings me into my next point, and that's the culture change. Well, I was there for this Patriots and Dolphins game. I got to go into the locker room. I got to speak with guys like Minkah Fitzpatrick, Bobby McCain, Kiko Alonso, Devontae Parker, Bryce Butler, a bunch of guys in this locker room. And what I can say is that the culture change narrative, I think it is in fact legit, because I was one of those guys. I thought it was a gimmick. I thought it was just a way to free up cap space and put up a cool, you know, word on it, you know? But no, it seems really legit. These guys, I cannot say it enough, put their football abilities to the side for a second. These guys on this team are some of the most respectful, classiest guys in this league, and I truly do mean that, because you see teams around the league where they will put their morals aside. They will get players just because the talent is there. You know, forget what he did. He got cut from a team because he got a DUI, something like that. It doesn't matter. If the talent's there, they'll go out and get him. But you look at this Dolphins locker room, you have guys that are really respectful. You have guys, if you're looking at that, if you're looking at the character of a person, if you're looking at their desire and their love for the sport of football, it is there with these guys. You can tell when they were celebrating in this locker room, they were excited. They truly do love the game. And I think that's something that Gates was looking for. And I think it is safe to say that he is accomplishing that goal. If you look around this team and what he has built, these are guys that truly do care about winning, and that's all they want to do. So I think you have to applaud Gates. I think this culture change thing did indeed end up being real. I think the locker room right now is in a wonderful state in terms of the sense of brotherhood among these guys. It's just terrific. So we move on to the next point, and that is going to be looking ahead to the game between the Dolphins and the Minnesota Vikings. Of course, my key to victory, and this will be the key to the victory in almost any game the Dolphins play, just because I think they're very, very concerning at this point, and it's their defense. Their ability to stop the run will always be the key to a victory, and I think that's one reason why the Dolphins were able to win this game against the Patriots. If you look at Sony Michel, he averaged less than 3 yards per carry. He is a guy who had over 100 yards last game. James White had 2 touchdowns. Sony Michel had 1 touchdown. Neither of them had a touchdown in this game. They were really limited. Even James White, who's a favorite of Tom Brady, was completely locked out of the passing game. So that will need to be implemented going into this game against Minnesota. They have Latavius Murray. They have Dalvin Cook, two guys who are very explosive, a dual-headed running back group. They must be controlled. Before you even look at any other weapon on this team, you have to control the run. It won't even matter that they have Adam Thielen. It won't matter that Stephon Diggs is there. It won't matter if Kirk Cousins is putting up a huge game. Stop the run. That is always goal number one. Now, the next key to the victory, I expect this game as of right now, if Xavien Howard doesn't play, I think it will have the same kind of flow as we saw in this game with the Patriots, and that being that the Dolphins kind of have to match the opponent's kind of high offense, because I think it is going to be a very good offense today for the Minnesota Vikings if Xavien Howard is indeed out, because you look at Adam Thielen, terrific season. You look at Stephon Diggs, you look at Kyle Rudolph, Dalvin Cook. There's a lot of mouths to feed. Xavien Howard being out, it will put a lot of pressure on these young cornerbacks. I think they eventually will be getting the ball moving. So I think this will be a game where Miami's offense, they need to be thriving again. So that once again, it will come down to establishing a run game. We saw what the running game is able to do for Tannehill. Tannehill was using Kenny Stills as a safety blanket. I don't know if that option is going to be there this game with Xavier Rhodes covering him likely for the duration, either him or Devontae Parker. So if you have Tannehill and one of his primary options is locked up by a top premier defensive back in this league, you're going to need to establish a running game and find some creative ways to get the ball to some of the other players that typically aren't getting the ball too much. That being Bryce Butler, that's probably going to be Devontae Parker. And do I dare say that Kenyon Drake should be more involved? I say that every week, but it seems like it never really happens until the end. But I do think this will be a game where Kenyon Drake needs to be more involved, whether it's in the passing or in the running. Just put the ball in his hands. We see what he can do. Just give him an opportunity. I think he is a guy who could be one of the premier backs in this league, but he's just not getting the touches. And I fear that, like how everyone was saying with the Packers, like how was Aaron Jones not getting the touches this whole time? This guy's amazing. I feel like that is what's going to be said about Kenyon Drake when he does indeed get like 15 plus touches in a single game. That's what we're going to be hearing. And that's how I'm going to wrap up this episode, guys. If you want a little bit more in-depth of a preview, I'm going to put it on my podcast. That's at Via the Source. Of course, you can always follow me. That's at Shady Steven. And of course, always remember to follow Dolphins Talk. That's on Twitter at Dolphins Talk. And go to DolphinsTalk.com as well. It's a great site just to stay updated on all the news about the Miami Dolphins. And that's how I'm going to wrap it up, guys. I'm Steven Masso, and this was your DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.